हरिः ॐ सहनवावतु सहनो भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
के पेज 21 चैप्टर 18 डिस्क्रिप्शन ऑफ वर्णाश्रम श्रील विश्वनाथ चक्रवर्ती ठाकुर राइट्स One should not approach houses known for impurity. Among the Brahmins, one should approach those who maintain themselves by donations, teaching, performing sacrifice, and taking grains from the field or market floor. One should not plan beforehand which houses will be good for accepting food. Right? So that's not the consideration. You're looking at the purity aspect, not what houses are good for food. Like that. And in that way, then one just goes to the various houses. Sri Krishna continued, taking the food gathered through begging, he should leave the populated areas and go to a reservoir of water. There, performing achman, in silence he should purify the food and distribute portions. He should eat everything he has begged, leaving no remnants. Right, because when you're invited to someone's house or that, then you may leave remnants. But for this, he shouldn't leave. Right? Does that make sense? Otherwise, then he should beg less. Like, you know, if before seven houses he's gotten enough, then he stops. Right? With no material attachment, with senses fully controlled, fully determined, satisfied in realization of Paramatma, and enjoying pastimes with Paramatma, he should travel about the earth alone, seeing with equal vision everywhere. Because it's all just Krishna's creation. So it's not that it's, if you're seeing equal, it's the consideration of its service to Krishna, the connection to Krishna. Not whether there's more enjoyment or not. Because we'll generally take it, this place is nicer because of the enjoyment or the facilities or that. When actually it's just, no, it's just a matter of serving Krishna. It's all Krishna's place. So, dwelling in a safe and solitary place, you know, so he has to be intelligent. He can't just, you know, how you say, sleep outside in a tiger reserve, you know, like that. You know, he has to use his intelligence. But solitary, right? His mind purified by constant thoughts of me. The sage should contemplate that the jiva is non-different from me. Right? It means, as we discussed before, it means has the same qualities. But being difference in quantity, the jiva is the servant of the Lord. But if you're basing on the qualities, then you're going to see Krishna's qualities and then that relationship with Krishna. Right? Mm-hmm. By studying knowledge, a sage should repeatedly ascertain the cause of the soul's bondage and liberation. Because it's something you go over and over again, that becomes fixed in the mind. So what causes you to be here is that attraction to sense gratification. What gets you out of here is that being not attached to sense gratification and attached to Krishna. Bondage occurs when the senses are deviated to sense gratification, and complete control of the senses constitutes liberation. Right? So complete control means engaging in the Lord's service. Control of the senses is what, but complete control means Krishna's service. Just so you know, trying to see what's going on.
The sannyasi is supposed to travel about the earth alone itself. So then whichever place, you know, he visits. Then for what duration of time does he stay in that particular place?
What do you mean by place?
Because I'm thinking of Lord Chaitanya. He stayed in Jagannath Puri. and then Gadadhar Pandit.
But is that a place in the material world?
No, it's a spiritual.
Yes, so then what's the problem? The problem is staying in material places.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Spiritual places, then it's not controlled by that rule.
Okay.
Right? So the jivas in connection with Krishna can live in the spiritual world eternally. Do they have to keep going around? No.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as material goes, they're all sannyasis. Therefore, completely controlling the five senses and the mind by thoughts of me, right? Because that's the key. The sage, having experienced spiritual bliss within the self, should live with detachment from insignificant material enjoyment. Right? That doesn't mean, okay, if it's significant material enjoyment, then he should pay attention, you know, but insignificant, like as a grihastha, you know, even the smallest amount you'll take, but now as a sannyasi, he doesn't bother with that. Now it's only big enjoyment he'll... No. Meaning material enjoyment is what's insignificant. Does that make sense? Yeah. The sage should travel to sanctified places, rivers, mountains, and forests. He should enter the cities, towns, and pasturing grounds and approach ordinary working men only to beg his bare necessity, his bare sustenance. He should beg from the hermitage of a vanaprastha sense by accepting food picked from the fields. The antakarana becomes pure, and one becomes freed from illusion. Right? Because Ritta is considered the best of all of the... It's the most purifying. Right? So of all the occupations, then the Ritta will be considered in that way the best, because you'll get... Its purity is very great, like that. Does that make sense? So even... It's not a matter of qualification, it's just a matter of you know, the qualification is the determination to maintain oneself in that way, that commitment. Does that make sense?
Ritta means to fine grain.
Ritta means to means what you said before.
Pick from the field.
Where did it go? Taking grains from the field or market floor. So it means when you say from the field, means after they harvest, then because like rice and grains, you harvest them when they're ripe.
Yeah.
So because they're ripe, they're attached to the stalk.
Yes.
But some of them may come loose because if they're unripe, then they'll all stay on very nice. And when they're ripe, some fall off, some percentage.
Yes.
So you know, those who are pious don't glean the field. Means after they harvest, they don't go back and sweep the field and get whatever fell on the ground. That's for then those who are, you know, living by this method.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Either by choice or by they don't have anything else, you know.
Yes. Yes.
But it's considered the most purifying of all the systems.
Yes.
Now, Amrita is a higher position, but it requires more qualification of the individual. Because Amrita means just what comes without asking, like the Python sadhana.
Yes.
There you have to be a Paramahamsa. So we're talking here about Vanaprastha sannyasis.
Yes.
Like that. So the sannyasi doesn't do that. He'll just beg.
Yes.
That'll that. Or when he begs, he might beg, he's saying here, you're begging from Vanaprasthas. Because what they've collected is from Ritta.
Yes.
Like that.
Yes.
But we see is that you can also... Like others, like Sukadeva Goswami and others, they don't even beg. It's just if something comes, then they eat, and if it doesn't, they don't. So it takes more qualifications. So it's not, it's one of the six, but it's not the recommended.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So begging and you know, how you say? And Ritta, like that. But it also says, you know, those living by donations. That means just by what comes and so on. So, donations, teaching, performing sacrifice, and taking grains from the field.
Yes.
Right? So these are, you know, your topmost occupations, you know, of the Brahmin. But for the Vanaprastha, he won't be taking donations, teaching, and performing sacrifice, and maintaining himself that way. I mean, he may be doing, but he's not, it's not, he maintains himself by gleaning from the field.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. He should never see as ultimate reality those material things which will perish. With consciousness free from attachment to this world and the next, he should withdraw from all activities meant for material progress. Right? So, as the Vanaprastha, they physically remove themselves. And they're also trying to, through these austerities, remove the mind from that. Whether it is or not is another thing, because they have to focus on just that, you know, getting from that gross to the subtle. But now for the sannyasi, they're taking that subtle position and now trying to make it complete in their understanding. Does that make sense? So the idea is that you're gradually, brahmacharya, you learn all the different aspects. Now if from that position then you can continue on, you're doing that by doing the activity, mental activities that the sannyasi is. So then you just continue like that and attain perfection that way. If not, one goes into grihastha life, then from there, one then applies that knowledge one has to the material activities. Then having done that, one starts to remove oneself from the activities, because even though they're connected to Krishna, there may still be that attachment to the activity itself. Right? So therefore, if there is no attachment, then the Vanaprastha ashram would be very easy to pull back from. Right? And then very quickly one can go on, you know, preaching and go into sannyasa or other things like that. But if not, then that ashram's to pull back from those points. Right? And then the sannyasa is that the mentality of these things is completely given up. Does that make sense? So we see that's your essential point of what the ashrams are for. That's why they're called spiritual. Right? Otherwise, why is it that there's one where, you know, you have nothing because you're so spaced out, and then when you get it together, then you get married and make money? Why would we call these spiritual? Right? That's the whole, they're called spiritual because they're actually a progress in the consciousness. You know, like Kardama Muni. He's a brahmachari, but because there's desire, he wants to attain the lotus feet of the Lord, but because of desire, then he takes care of that desire as a grihastha. Then he moves on to these other.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. And it is gradual, much.
It's gradual. Yes. So the point is this can all be done in a moment, and if not, then the Vedic system gives you a lifetime to work it out.
And for everyone.
Yeah, so this idea is, oh no, this is too quick or too... No, you're given a lifetime.
Yes.
And if you need more than one lifetime, you don't have to worry. That will come anyway.
Yes.
You know? You know, like that. You know, it's like, what was that? The one... Yeah, so the... Yeah, I can't remember who was making the point. It's that they were making the point that getting another birth... That's guaranteed. Not, that's easy. But if you come across a good meal, take full advantage, because that is very rare. But it's one of these, you know, known, how you say, I'm not sure if it goes back to Vedic, but at least Indian personalities, you know. I'm not sure if that's Charvak or who that was, but is, you know. Making the point is that, you know, a good meal, that's rare. But getting another birth, that every living entity is getting that, you know, so. Yeah. So one doesn't have to worry that, oh no, but it's too fanatic, it takes so much time. Then it'll, don't worry. That's being arranged. You just focus on how much you can progress now and get as far as you can. Because if you do have to take another birth, why not take another birth at an advantage, being farther elevated than you are now? Right. With consciousness free from attachment to this world and the next. Right? So the next means he's attached to the heavenly planets or Brahman or anything like that. Right? He should withdraw from all activities meant for material progress. He should logically consider the universe, as well as the mind, speech, and life air, to be ultimately products of Maya, situated in the Lord. Thus, situated in the self, rejecting them all, he should never think of them. So he's not worried about, he's not absorbed in them. Like he's just, you know, thinking about the transcendental position. He can contemplate about their nature, but he doesn't contemplate them separate from understanding the nature.
Can we say that he is fully satisfied with Krishna?
Yes.
So there
yes.
is no extra desire?
No. But that's what you're working for. So he's giving the position of someone who's situated very nicely here.
Yes.
Right? So, in other words, someone who's a well-situated vanaprastha could do all those, but let's say for preaching, we do other austerities, like,
yes.
you know, traveling,
yes.
you know, spending time in all the different places and people's homes and temples and buses and trains and, you know, whatever it is.
Yes.
You know, it's just that austerity, that's the thing that one does, and then one is always engaged in the preaching. Because more will get accomplished in the preaching mission by that, as opposed to sitting out in the forest and, you know, sitting between four fires. Right? Does that make sense? In fact, that's probably easier than giving a class where everybody has all kinds of, you know, how you say, aggressive questions. Right? You know, the fires aren't grumpy, right? You know, it's like that. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes, how can one give up sweets and develop an inclination for coarse grains collected from the field? One should not see things like food substantial. Oh, one should not see things like food, as substantial, since they will be destroyed. Being unattached to this world and the next, one should become disinterested in activities to attain those things. Right, so what will gain you all those things, that he's not interested in. Right? One should establish by logic that all things in the world are the products of the gunas of Maya. The logic is as follows. The effects are not actually nothing but the cause. They are all one with Paramatma. Therefore, one does not think of them as individual objects of any value. Right? Krishna is what's value. So, anything that you're perceiving in the world, any effect, or any, yeah, all the effects, they come from the cause. The cause is Krishna. So you don't see them separate from Krishna. So if there's service there within them to be engaged in Krishna's service, then that's rendered. If not, you just think of Krishna. So everything can remind you of Krishna. Even if it's not something that you're involved in, because it reminds you of Paramatma, which then you are absorbed in. Right? And then being absorbed in Paramatma, it is an area of service to be rendered. Then you render that service to that Paramatma. Does that make sense? So that's the meaning. Everything is seen as Brahman. Everything is Krishna. Verses 28 to 41. Right? So this is the whole principle that one's trying to see. Krishna in everything. So you're trying to get to that position. Right? So verses 28 to 41, the Paramahamsas and Jnanis. Sri Krishna continued, a person fixed in jnana and detached from external objects, or my devotee who is detached even from desire for liberation, both should reject the ashram duties based on external rituals or paraphernalia and conduct themselves beyond the range of rules. Right, so what requires so many paraphernalia in that? That's not so necessary. So unless it's useful in the service, but for oneself, it's not necessary. It's just like, let's say Prabhupada goes to a temple, like Los Angeles or New York. Very nice facilities, all kinds of arrangements and things that are there. But when he would travel to leave to the next temple, he'd just have his little bag, and then he'd have one suitcase. You know, regular size suitcase that his stuff and the dictaphone and the servant's stuff went in. Right, so the servant had to become renounced also, and then he had that little bag that he would carry, the little handbag. It was it's smaller than a briefcase. It's like a file kind of thing with handles on it, you know, like that. But it's permanent, and in that he'd have important papers or this or that or stuff like that, and a few things. So that's what was his. All the other stuff was there for service at that place. So that's the point, is that, you know, some would say, oh, why such a fancy thing? It's not his, it's the temple's.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if the temple wants to engage it in devotee service, that's fine. But it belongs to the temple, because when Prabhupada goes, it doesn't go with him.
Yes.
But, yeah. Okay. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The mature jnani and the nishkam devotee are beyond the rules of varnashram, right? So the jnani who's gone through the sannyas thing and come up to this point where he only sees things connected to Paramatma, mm-hmm. right? So then him and the mature devotee, who is also seeing the same thing, but he'll connect it back to Bhagavan. Right? The mature jnani, devoid of expectations of even good position, should reject the rules. Right? The rules are getting... Complete indifference to things, anapekshaka, is not possible for the devotee who has not developed prema. Thus, the devotee who has developed prema gives up the ashrams along with all the signs of ashrams, such as the stick and water pot. Right? Because it's a position of sannyas, just they don't carry all those signs. Right? The devotee who has not developed prema, who is not anapekshaka, gives up the actions of the ashrams, but not its external signs. Right? So they may give up that aspect, but they'll still stay in that position, because people then will deal appropriately. Right? Does that make sense? Because the one who's beyond it, doesn't matter how they deal. Right, and his position is such that people will appreciate. But then they maintain that. Like you see, Prabhupada would maintain the Ramanujacharya Madhva. They're beyond.
Yes.
But they maintain just for his there. You know, some will do, since they're following Vaikuntha lines, then the aspects of rules and regulations are part of their sadhana. In the way of, that's what they'll be doing in the spiritual world also. So then they'll keep some more rules. But it's only sort to fit within that construct, right?
Maharaj, is it in connection with, for example, sannyasi have their danda, some are not the danda? Is it connected to this point here?
No, it was because the normal thing is that the danda is there; it's carried because it establishes the ashram and everything like that. And it also it's in a bit of an austerity. You know, but just a bit. It's easier than... You want to travel, it's easier to take a danda than a family. Like that. <Yeah. laughs> You know, but still, it's some trouble. But Prabhupada had mentioned before is that they carry for 10 years, and then after that, then they don't need... Because generally, you take sannyas when you're older, and so after 10 years, you need a cane or something anyway. But generally, cane or umbrella is also bona fide paraphernalia. Like that. So, you know, a lot of sannyasis, they've been around for more than that, so many don't carry. Some still carry, you know, they prefer to carry and all that, and it works very nicely. So it's quite individual. But at least that those first 10 years, it should be like that. However, for the devotees in general, giving up the actions of a swadharmic take place to some degree from the beginning of bhakti. Right, so anything to do that specifically is for material benefit, even from the beginning of bhakti, they start giving that up. So it's not even just the elements of the sannyas ashram itself. Is that because the principle of sannyas, of doing everything to please Krishna, that naishkarmya, then, so it's not naishkarmya means just giving up the effect of the results of action just because you're renounced. You're giving it up, giving it to Krishna. So that's happening right from the beginning of bhakti. So you'll already start to see symptoms of it there. Like that. But one should know the difference between where you're giving it up because there's no interest, or you're giving it up because it's too much trouble. Or it's giving it up because you don't even understand why we should do those things. Right? Yeah. Yes.
And we can do that only 1 hour. In one day, not 24 hours.
Yes, yes. You know, so then it's a matter of, like we discussed this morning, then finding the position that works for you at this point. But we should always be constantly looking at that and analyzing it, because that point may adjust. Like that. Facilities adjust, you know, how we deal adjusts, you know, the circumstances, all these things. So then he says, as long as one is not satiated by fruit of activity, and has not awakened his taste for devotional service, hearing and chanting, one has to act according to the regulative principles of the Vedic injunction. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:29. So one must do that. Right? But if one has awoken his taste for devotional hearing and chanting, we see that these start to go down. But they're going down because you're replacing it with hearing and chanting. It's not that it goes down because of laziness or lack of interest or impurity or all that kind of thing. Because the matured jnani and the prema bhakta have no tendency for sin, there's no fear of bad conduct. So if they don't follow the rules, they'll never do anything wrong anyway. So the rules are there. The rules are there, one, to engage you in Krishna service, but to make sure that you're not engaged in things that are not Krishna service. Does that make sense? Because it's both things. You have getting up from the Brahma Muhurta. It engages you in a positive activity, but it also keeps you from doing a negative activity of sleeping in. Yes. Right? Yes. Yeah, like that. So the rules accomplish both. So you have to see. So someone who transcends the rules means without rules, they will always do what is favorable to Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. Right? They won't be doing something else. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, then rules are there to guide it, to make it fixed. Yeah? Yeah.
In the previous paragraph.
Sorry?
In the previous paragraph, the regulative principle of the Vedic injunction means like it is Varnashram Dharma or it is something different?
Yes. It's Varnashram Dharma because Vedic injunctions get as wide as possible. So how much fruit of activity you're interested in, you have to follow the rules for all that.
Yes.
Like that. That's the whole point. And the less it is, the less rules, because the rules are governing that the fruit of activities, the activities of jnana, are progressive towards bhakti.
Yes.
Now, if someone doesn't take up that interest in bhakti, they've at least gone through the position. That's why it said it's such a waste, because they've attained human life, which you can do that. They might even be following all the regulative principles to elevate themselves in bhakti, but they don't take up devotional service.
Yes.
And then with time, due to pride, this and that, then they go around the, circle again.
Yes.
So then that's considered such a loss, such a waste.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So, since they have no tendency for sin, there's no fear of bad conduct, thus they do not have to follow rules. That's the reason. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm a devotee, I don't have to. I'm chant, I don't have to. No, it's that you have to be a mature jnani or prema bhakti, then you don't have to follow rules.
That's
cool.
Huh?
Yeah. So otherwise, basically, what always follows, because even means Uttama comes as a madhyama to preach, and generally speaking, their attitude and presentation of themselves is that they're a neophyte. So if they're in the preaching context, then they'll generally be following, whatever is the basic, core kind of rules. But because since they're not engaging in anything outside of the service, they don't have to follow rules that govern what's outside of the service. Right? Sri Krishna continued, although most wise, the Paramahamsa should enjoy life like a child, oblivious to honor and dishonor. Although most expert, he should behave like a stunted, incompetent person. Although most learned, he should speak like an insane person. And although a scholar learned in Vedic regulations, he should behave in an unrestricted manner. Right? So he just is just, so people won't know. But it's not that he has to plan, it's just that he's so absorbed in Krishna, these things will happen anyway. If you're absorbed in Krishna, sometimes you're laughing, sometimes you're crying. You're not attached to anything, so you're not sticking in any one place, you're always moving. Like that. But it's not that they don't know, it's that they have all this understanding, right? Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes, fearing disturbance from getting recognition from the public, he does not reveal himself. Right? So that's the whole point, is that if you get recognition, then how the public, we can say, is, oh no, because there's so much, sometimes there's so much talk about how we're not catching the mass, the public, this, that. But the point is unless you're in a qualified position, if you catch their attention, what are they interested in? They're interested in the mundane. So now if you can give them Krishna consciousness, great. But if you get distracted by all that attention and all that, then what's the point? Because neither they get Krishna nor do you. So that's why, unless it's something to do with Krishna consciousness, you don't get involved. Though learned in the meaning of the Vedas, he does not follow the rules. Though he should hide himself, he should not do certain activities, listed in verses 30 to 31. Okay. Yeah, when he says hide himself, means it's not obvious. But there's certain things he shouldn't do in hiding himself. Sri Krishna continued. So these are the one things. A devotee should never engage in the rituals mentioned in the Karmakanda section of the Vedas. Nor should he take up the marks of a Buddhist or become involved in logic. You should never take any side whatsoever in useless arguments. Right? If you're establishing Krishna consciousness, that you think. But if it's one of these arguments is just going to go back and forth, you're stupid. No, you're stupid. No, well, you're more stupid. What do you mean? You're the most stupid. Well, I'm not as stupid as you're the most stupid. You know though you don't take sides. Right? Otherwise, both of them will gang up and they'll find common ground that you're the most stupid, and that way they'll be friends. Right? A saintly person should never let others disturb him, and similarly should never disturb other people. Right? So whatever they do, he shouldn't allow it to disturb him. So either that means his mentality is such that it doesn't bother him, or he just goes somewhere else. It's easy enough. Right? He should talk, and he doesn't disturb others. He just does what he's doing, and he does it in such a way it won't bother them. He should tolerate the insults of others and should never insult anyone. He should never create hostility with anyone for the sake of the material body. Right? You know, because that means position, facility, all these things. For he would thus be no better than an animal. Right? Because an animal will create hostility with others for the benefit of the body. Right? One animal finds some food, the other animal comes and fights for it. So, Sri Krishna continued. The one Supreme Lord is situated within all material bodies and within everyone's soul, just as the moon is reflected in innumerable reservoirs of water. The Supreme Lord, although one, is present within everyone. Thus, every material body is ultimately composed of the energy of the one Supreme Lord. Right? Because that's the point. Everything's connected to the Lord, so it's only seen in that capacity. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The way to avoid having enemies is described. Paramatma is in all beings, such as humans or animals, and in the jiva. Just as the moon is perceived as a reflection in water by its rays. Because the cause is in the effects, the moon is in all the reflections. By seeing Paramatma in all jivas, there is no cause for enmity from the spiritual point of view. Because all bodies are non-different from Paramatma, being his effects, there is no cause for enmity from the point of view of the body. Okay. So from Paramatma is in all jivas, so from the spiritual point of view, then there's no cause to for creating enemies. And because all the bodies are effects of the Supreme Lord, so they're non-different from the Lord, therefore even from the point of view of the body, there's no reason to. So one sees everything in both contexts connected to the Lord. Right, the Lord is in everything, and everything is in the Lord. That same point that was given before.
I have a doubt that after the 10th canto, and Uddhava actually went to Braj and saw the Braj for whatever he saw there.
He's after this conversation, before this conversation?
No, before.
Oh, okay.
So now Krishna explains to him all of this, and it's very logical, it's very dry. So why would he do that? Because he knows he's leaving, Uddhava is leaving. Why is this conversation at that point?
But remember, Krishna said that he's benefited so many persons, you know, Brahma, Indra, and all these different persons. But he never got to benefit the Narnarayan Rishi. Right? Narnarayan Rishi are doing austerities for the benefit of the whole universe.
Right.
So these instructions, then he will take these and go to Badrik Ashram and discuss these with them. In this way, then through the medium of Uddhava, he's benefiting them. Does that make sense? And now there's also the other aspect, is that let's just say one has seen Vrindavan and seen the excellence of that position, does that mean one has attained it?
No.
So then 11th canto is giving you the means to attain it. Right? So it's just like how we're saying the mind works from Sambandha Prayojana and then back to Abhideya. Right? It means you contemplate something, you see the benefits of it, then you're willing to take up endeavoring for it.
Yes.
Yeah? Like that. So therefore, having seen, it means we've given all the preliminaries in the 9 cantos, then seeing the 10th canto, the goal, now you're willing to work for it. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So these are just the technical points that come up, and also these are the points that come up in the, you can say is anyone can use them, but especially as one advances more, they become more and more part of the process. So being able to see everything connected to Krishna and Krishna and everything, right? Then that's how one actually overcomes the, one gives up the desire for sense enjoyment. One gives up the need for justice or, you know, and all facilities and right and wrong and considerations based on the body. It's with these points. Like that. If one can immediately go to the point you're just absorbed in the holy name and absorbed in Krishna and his pastime, then great. Then that's good. That's what you're trying to get to anyway. So if you're already there, then you don't have to worry about it. But if not, if one finds that having heard, you've gone to that ecstatic kirtan, you've heard the wonderful class about the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, and, you know, and it's so ecstasy and all that, like that. And then afterwards it's, you know, I say, business as usual, you know, then these elements then are helpful. Does that make sense? Because the point is this, what is looking dry here? If we look at it technically.
The approach, it's very dry.
The approach, but what is the approach dealing with?
Yeah, senses, disconnects, and just follow the rules.
Right. But what are those... What are you disconnecting from, and what are the rules regulating?
That's a lifestyle.
Yeah, and where is this lifestyle conducted?
Material world.
So, in other words, that dryness you're getting is the dryness of the material world. So having to deal with it, it's dry. Is that from realization or is that from the smoke?
Both.
Does that make sense? Because you see, it's when you're dealing with Krishna's pastimes, it's so wonderful. But then when you deal with getting the material world to get out of this and get to those pastimes, you see, then it's, like you said, it can be a bit dry. So that, what does that mean? It means material life is dry. Because even when we talk about Nanda Baba, he's having a big festival and he's feeding the Brahmins and he's doing all these technical things and collecting ingredients and, Indraprastha.
Rajasuya.
And so then that means Yudhishthir. Yes, Yudhishthir Maharaj. So Yudhishthir Maharaj. And we hear so many details and that and other places, some, you know, technical points and this and that, but it's not dry because you see the connection, the direct connection to Krishna. So this is trying to give up the attachment to the material world, so you're engaging that aspect of the indirect, but not as through the senses, but through the understanding. But it's about how you can be connected with Krishna all the time. How you can always be hearing and chanting and remembering Krishna. Because one will give it up for opportunities for sense gratification or being disturbed by, being insulted or, planning your, revenge is best served cold, like that kind of thing, So all these kind of aspects that takes away from your interest in or taste in devotional service. So all it is addressing all that time. So if you're always absorbed in Krishna, then all these things are either already accomplished or, don't have as much significance. Because the volume of your life that has to deal with this is very small. Shall we stop there?
The thing is that many devotees, they give an extra points to Gyan because it's in 11th canto and they're bewildered and thinking that, after all the Leela and everything, this is what's important actually. They give it like an
No, extra. This is what's important to get you to, in other words, that you're engaging everything connected to Krishna, that the 9 cantos are pointed out, then you're seeing what it means being involved in the Krishna's pastimes. But then the 11th canto is then explaining how you can always be situated on that platform. Right? Because now you have that interest. You've heard about it. Now you're attracted to. Therefore, now you want to attain that. So this is the method. So it's like anything. Let's say... what do you think about, it's like, people are working hard and all that, and, now and again a little break, then they may be more refreshed and everything like that and all that. And yeah, it happens like that. So, maybe a vacation or something like that. Yeah, that could be that. Okay, what about, we could go here, go there and all that, and there's so many options. You could do this there and that there and so many things. And you say, yeah, okay, great. Yeah, let's do that. Okay, go to this website, do all these different things, That's the 11th canto. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay.
We have the same thing actually in Bhagavad Gita.
Exactly the same thing.
To 18. Many mention about Vedanta Sutra.
Yes. Yeah. And then it goes back. Yes. It's the same. And here in 11th canto also.
Yes.
So it's that same common body of knowledge is that. The Vedanta aspect, or the Nyaya aspect, is for the purpose of removing yourself from the material world. Because the point is that even we analyze Krishna consciousness itself, Krishna's pastimes of that, we don't find it gets dry. The more they get into detail, the nicer it gets. But when we analyze the material world, we see the drier it gets. So what is it? Because the material world is drier. The process is fine. But that's the whole point, is that when you analyze something, it loses its interest. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Is that we're good?
Yes.
Yeah. Sri Krishna continued, "If at times one does not attain proper food, one should not be depressed. And when one obtains sumptuous food, one should not rejoice. Right? Being fixed in determination, one should understand both situations to be under the control of God." So you're going to remember Krishna anyway. You don't have food or proper food, you still remember Krishna. And when you attain proper food, then it should also remind you of Krishna. So in both ways, one remembers Krishna. Right, there's no distraction. Yeah, so you don't get, the Hallelujah Chorus or Carmina Burana, right? Like that. If required, one should endeavor to get sufficient foodstuffs. because it is always necessary and proper to maintain one's health. You make that endeavor, right? So he's begging or doing the different things. When the senses, mind, and life air are fit, one can contemplate spiritual truth. And by understanding the truth, one is liberated. A sage should accept the food, clothing, and bedding, be they of excellent or inferior quality, that come of their own accord. Right? So if they're excellent, it doesn't mean you don't accept it. Vanaprastha, he doesn't accept it. He only, you know, he's just into austerity. Grihastha only accepts the good stuff. Yeah, you understand? So, but the sannyasi, whatever comes, if it's good, he'll use it for Krishna. If it's not so good, he'll use it for Krishna. So, yeah, so it's just whatever will, you know, fit the position the best. You know, what comes of its own accord. Okay? Yeah? So, because sometimes they say, oh, but someone has fancy stuff. But that it works very nicely for Krishna. But if they don't have fancy stuff, they're also using it for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? They're there in that fancy, you know, 5-star hotel, you know, room and bathroom and that, but they're also in the brahmachari shower in the temple that, you know, that doesn't even have a thing for turning the shower on. You know, it's sitting up on the, where you keep the soap. Yes. I've literally seen that. You take it off, you use it, but make sure when you're done, you put it back. You know, generally you don't have to be reminded to put it back because when you turn it off, it will fall off on the floor anyway and you'll notice it. So you pick it up and put it on that shelf. Yeah. So they're doing both. Like that. Sri Krishna continued, just as I, the Supreme Lord, execute regulative duties by my own free will, similarly, one who has realized knowledge of me should maintain general cleanliness, purify his hands with water, take bath, and execute other regulative duties, not by force, by his own free will. He's doing it because he sees how it is pleasing to Krishna. Right? Footnote 2. Hosanaprita, there is no work prescribed for me within all the three planetary systems, nor am I in want of anything, nor have a need to obtain anything. And yet, I am engaged in prescribed duties. Bhagavad Gita 3.22. He doesn't need anything, and nor is he trying to get anything. So, you know, like that. So there's nothing for him, but he's doing... So in the same way, especially who's in a position where they can preach and like that, then they're going to follow, you know, the basic principles and all that. Does that make sense? So in one sense, we've been ourselves given that kind of lifestyle already. And then we try to pick that apart. But Srila Prabhupada himself being, you know, on this platform, the Paramahamsa, he's following those basic rules that make it useful for everybody. So any devotee could follow them. So they're the essence. Anyone could follow them and become God conscious. Now you want to add more to it, then that's fine. But how much he's doing, that's generally just the standard minimum that works in Krishna consciousness. But it's already technically the lifestyle of the Paramahamsa. But the difference is we're seeing it as rules we have to follow, while Srila Prabhupada is doing it because he wants to follow it. You know, like Krishna, to please Krishna. But that same simple elements are there. Does that make sense? So Prabhupada would do like that. But it should be done in all the aspects, not just pick the ones you like and don't, you know, like that. So he's given a complete lifestyle, and it's technically the Paramahamsa lifestyle. But it still fits within the framework of the Varnashram system. So what we've been given is already on that topmost platform. We've already been, technically, we've been already given the 11th canto. So in one sense, that's also why it seems, you know, just... You know, kind of, or because we, you know, we already know this. We may have to remind ourselves, but does that make sense? Yeah.
Krishna further says, if I don't do like this, I'll be the cause of unwanted population.
Yes, because then people won't follow rules, and if they don't follow rules, they get an unwanted population. Yes?
We don't have references to Bhagavad Arkamarichimala for Canto 11.
We don't have references, yes, because whenever they come up, everyone would go, huh? So we didn't put them in. They'll be in a separate study. See, as I said, the Bhagavad Arkamichi Mala, the verses are all there and they're in a particular order. So it's not like let's say we make a compendium of verses on philosophical points. We'll just kind of put them we'll make some areas and put them in there. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur will put them in an order that by reading them, you understand the meaning and the purport. So then when we just get one here, we don't know the context of what were the verses before and afterwards. Therefore, we don't see the context. And we wonder, what does this got to do with, why is this in this section? Why not in that section? So then we figured we'll just keep it as a study on its own at the end, where we can just read through those verses, and then you can now see why they're there. I mean, if you really want, we can put them back in.
Now, extra questions also.
Oh, getting to the essence. Okay, yeah.
Awesome.
But what about then when they come up? Now you know what it means. Now you can do the essay questions.
In the future.
In the future, I see. Okay. A realized soul no longer sees anything as separate from me, right? So following all these rules, they don't see it separate. We find it difficult with the rules. Oh, we chant, we don't follow the rules because we see that rules are separate from Krishna. We see the chanting connected to Krishna, but the rules separate. But here it's saying that this realized soul, he doesn't see any difference between anything in Krishna. It's all connected to Krishna. Therefore, if it's something that is naturally done, he doesn't see any problem in it because it's all connected to Krishna. So following these, the basic, or essential rules, then isn't a difficulty. Right? Okay. A realized soul no longer sees anything as separate from me, for his realized knowledge of me has destroyed such illusory perception. Since the material body and mind were previously accustomed to this kind of perception, it may sometimes appear to reoccur. But at the time of death, the self-realized soul achieves opulences equal to mind. And so now and again, these things come up in the mind just because one's been involved with them. Because it is the same mind. Right? That's what we're dealing with. In this regard, Sri Krishna said, those who are without any desire for personal gratification, whose minds are always attached to me, who are peaceful, without false ego, and merciful to all living entities, and whose consciousness is never affected by opportunities for sense gratification. Such persons enjoy in me a happiness that cannot be known or achieved by those lacking such detachment from the material world. My dear Uddhava, if my devotee has not fully conquered his senses, he may be harassed by material desires. But because of his unflinching devotion for me, he will not be defeated by sense gratification. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:14, 17 through 19. Means that, so what he's meaning here is that since the material body and mind were previously accustomed to this kind of perception, it may sometimes appear to reoccur. So that's what he's meaning here. If my devotee has not fully conquered his senses, he may be harassed by material desires. But because of his unflinching devotion, he will not be defeated. They may come up just because of their recollection of the mind, but he doesn't act on them. Right? So that's a harassment. Does that make sense? It's like the guy in Newmarket. He comes up once, if you want to bask a guy, you tell him no. And he just keeps asking, dhoti, sari, change money. Like that. He says, get out of here, like that. I can give you a good price. Yeah. That's harassment. So that's the mind and may do that. It just brings things up. You're not interested, but you just...
When you say unflinching devotion, means this is a primary thing. When a person wants to develop bhakti first.
Yes, means that it's just about, he sees that developing devotion is the most important thing. He may not have developed it, but he has that unflinching devotion for Krishna. He's fixed on that point.
Yes.
So that degree once fixed, that conviction, you know, vyavasayatmika buddhi, you know, whatever stage, that's where you're going to get the dynamic benefit.
Yes.
Right? One will advance very nicely at that point.
Yes. And even the secondary aspect of disturbing, come back to the first.
Yes, you just come back to Krishna and they'll go away. They'll adjust. Because they're only there because we're not absorbed in Krishna.
Yes.
You know, because we spent so much time not being absorbed in Krishna. You know, unlimited lifetimes, basically. So it's a habit. So that in one lifetime one can get rid of that. That itself is very amazing. So already, it's, you know, as he said previously, just even the newest devotee who's developed faith already is starting to give up things that he was doing for his sense gratification that aren't important anymore. Like that. So, Sri Krishna continued. One who is detached from sense gratification, knowing its results to be miserable, and who desires spiritual perfection, but who has not seriously analyzed the process for attaining me, should approach a bona fide and learned spiritual master. Until a devotee has clearly realized spiritual knowledge, he should continue with great faith and respect, and without envy to render personal service to the Guru, who is non-different from me. Right, so that also then gives a point, is that one is detached from sense gratification, knowing the results, but desires spiritual perfection, but he has not seriously analyzed the process for attaining. So approaching the Guru, one then learns these things. Because then when one's situated in that, where one is absorbed in Krishna, then these don't have so much importance. You know, it's like we said before, that knowledge, it is for the purpose of burning up. It is the fire to burn up the wood or the logs of material existence. And when the wood is burnt, you know, to ashes, then the fire goes out. There's no need of that particular knowledge. Right? One doesn't need it to situate yourself there. But as said before, he may follow it because it will, you know, to please Krishna. You know, for preaching, and that one may follow. You know, so like Srila Prabhupada and the Goswamis, and they're following.
That means that here this is a perfect person who approaches the spiritual master. When he's detached from sense gratification, he will develop spiritual perfection. So does that mean that before it's possible to be detached without spiritual master?
I mean, even the karmis, you explain to them, is every time they get involved in sense gratification, it ends up as misery. They can catch that. Otherwise, how does existentialism come into existence? Right?
But also to desire spiritual perfection.
Yeah, and you want to that. So therefore, then you approach the spiritual master. You appreciate.
Yes.
See, is that you're also talking here in the Vedic culture, is it's known all these things. You're already controlling. You already know the benefits.
Yes.
But you may not have seen them in relationship to, you know, actual spiritual realization. You know, so then you approach the bona fide spiritual master will now connect you and show you how it works.
Yes.
But in any case, by associating with the devotees and all that, then it takes it up. Because the Agyata Sukriti has to develop to a particular volume for one to develop faith. Right? And so that means, that's why it says many lifetimes of pious activities for one to take up devotional service. But it means the piety of being connected to devotional service. But it's only called Agyata Sukriti.
Yes.
Because it's not called bhakti until one develops faith. When one develops faith, then from that point it's called bhakti. Right? So that may take, you know, so many lifetimes. You know, it's just like the guy walks down the street to work every day going by the Harinam party. How long is it, how many years does it take before one day he comes over and says, well, what are you guys doing here? You know, so that means it's so much Agyata Sukriti. Now finally he asks, what's happening? So these kind of things develop over lifetimes. Right? You know, how pious it is that every day you walk by the Harinam. Right? Everybody else is going to work. How many are going by the Harinam party? Right? So. Yes.
Jiva Goswami describes about among the 9 stages of devotional service, Adoshraddha is that stage where one surrenders to feet of spiritual master.
Oh.
So this point is where actually, then only you can move to the next stage, otherwise.
Yeah, otherwise then that's kind of it. Yeah, because in the material you can just get better at it, but it doesn't actually bring you any closer to Krishna. Right, so the point is, even these mature jnanis, until they take up devotional service, it's not actually going to give them eternal benefit. But they could come to this platform, by not having a full understanding like that. But the actual proper then would be in devotional service. They're going to understand it quickly. Others, you see so many great sages and saints and all these great sages and all that. But it's not necessarily that they're great devotees, but you generally see they all know about Krishna.
Yes.
And when he comes, they all come and offer him prayers, like at Kurukshetra, when they all came and they saw the Lord, then they offered all their prayers and everything. And then after, then Vasudev then asked them to perform a sacrifice for him. So they said all this nice knowledge, right? So they have an understanding. So they're always, has that element, that devotional element to some degree, but whether it's prominent enough that you would say that they're devotees, that's why he says mature jnanis, and then the devotees. Because being a jnani doesn't mean they don't know about Krishna, it's just that it hasn't become about devotion to Krishna. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, having described the activities of a person who has attained knowledge, Krishna describes the activity of a person desiring to attain knowledge. A person who is not considered paramatma, ajigyasita mandharma, should approach a guru. Right, so if we're not seeing how Krishna is paramatma, is connected with everything and everything's in him, then you approach a guru. Then you can learn. So here we see is that, the Bhagavatam has done that. And so then we can hear all these things. Otherwise, we'd never ask about these things. Sri Krishna continued, one who has not controlled the 6 forms of illusion, lust, anger, greed, excitement, false pride, and intoxication. That's interesting. In other words, instead of attachment, then they put excitement. Yeah, it's always interesting when the same ones are given, but they have different synonyms, so it broadens your kind of understanding about it. Because you're attached to what you're excited about. Right? Because the attachment will create a transformation, which will bring about excitement. Right? Whose intelligence, the leader of the senses, is extremely attached to material things, who is bereft of knowledge and detachment, who adopts the sannyas order of life to make a living, who denies the worshipable demigods, his own self and the supreme Lord within himself, thus ruining all religious principles, and who is still infected by material contamination, is deviated and lost both in this life and the next. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, 2 verses criticize the sannyasi of bad conduct. Krishna says, his intelligence is uncontrolled, prachanda indriya sharatihi, and takes sannyas to make a living. He deceives the devatas who should be worshipped, his own atma and me, situated within all beings. As a result of that deception, he is lost in this life and the next. Then they'll just be deviated off this path. Verses 42 to 48, the goal and results of Varnashram Dharma. Sri Krishna continued, the main religious duties of a sannyasi are equanimity and nonviolence. Whereas for the vanaprastha, austerity and philosophical understanding of the difference between the body and soul are prominent. right? Just as we gave the essential points of the varnas, now this is the essential points of the ashramas. The main rules for a householder are to give shelter to all living entities and perform sacrifices. And the brahmachari is mainly engaged in serving the spiritual master. Okay. Yes, we discussed this one. A householder may approach his wife for sex only at the time prescribed for begetting children. Otherwise, the householder should practice celibacy, austerity, cleanliness of mind and body, satisfaction of in his natural position, and friendship towards all living entities. Worship of me is to be practiced by all human beings, regardless of social or occupational divisions. One who worships me by his prescribed duty, having no other object of worship, and who remains conscious of me as present in all living entities, achieves unflinching devotional service unto me. Yeah, so he's talking about the varnashram. So if you, by worshiping Krishna through your prescribed duties, right, always being absorbed in Krishna with no other object to worship, then you become conscious of me, you attain Krishna. My dear Uddhava, I am the Supreme Lord of all worlds, and I create and destroy this universe, being its ultimate cause. I am thus the absolute truth, and one who worships me with unfailing devotional service comes to me. Thus, one who has purified his existence by execution of his prescribed duties, who fully understands my supreme position, and who is endowed with scriptural and realized knowledge, very soon achieves me. Those who are followers of this Varnashram system accept religious principles according to the authorized traditions of proper conduct. When such Varnashram duties are dedicated to me in loving service, they award the supreme perfection of life. Right? So, even though it's a religious process, it's a secondary aspect. When it's connected to the primary, then it becomes perfect. That's what we were discussing. That's the descending process. Starts with Krishna, then you add to that connecting to Krishna through Varnashram. Right, or through Pancharatra, or through like all these different aspects you connect. My dear saintly Uddhava, I have now described to you, just as you inquired, the means by which my devotee, perfectly engaged in his prescribed duty, can come back to me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So at this late stage, he's also describing Varnashram, but how it can be used by the devotees to come to him. Right? That's a very important point, because sometimes it's just taken, oh, the Varnashram's external. Because when Ramananda Rai expressed that to Lord Chaitanya as the first point, Lord Chaitanya rejected it. But did he reject following it, or he rejected it saying it's external, because he says what's the essence? The essence isn't Varnashram. Mm-hmm. Right? The essence is prema. Right? So then engaged in your duties in connection with Krishna, then it becomes in line with it. So therefore, if we're saying the essence, then it's the connection to Krishna. But it doesn't mean that you don't follow Varnashram or use Varnashram, because they use that, because he's asking what's the highest truth. Mm. So whoever said Varnashram is the highest truth anyway, Prabhupada never said. But he didn't say we don't follow it because it's not the highest truth, because if it's the highest truth, then it's just sitting down and chanting and that's it. And so who's doing that? So if you're not doing that, then you follow Varnashram. Right? That's the basic principle. That's how it works. So, yeah.
When Mahaprabhu met Tattvavadis, he asked that question, what's the sadhana and what's the sadhya? Mm-hmm. So they said the sadhana is Varnashram.
Mm-hmm.
And the sadhya is five kinds of liberation. Mm. And he said no.
Mm-hmm.
Chanting is the sadhana and prema is the goal.
Goal, yes. Yeah. Because Rupa Goswami very carefully then defines in when he's talking about the nine processes. So in Dasyam he very specifically points out that doesn't mean Varnashram.
Does not
mean Varnashram. Because from what I've understood for the Sris and Madhvas, they consider Varnashram as part of the sadhana.
Yes.
Because that's what they'll be doing in Vaikuntha, and so they do it now. But, you know, they still miss the point that it's the surrender to Krishna that makes it. You know, it comes later, you know, when you have prapatti, you know, that surrender to Krishna. But they consider that, you know, a very secret thing. We start off with that. We, you know, we make devotees with that, you know, like that. And they only, after someone's very mature, then they may take that position up. So, yeah. So for them it's part, but for us it's not. We engage in it, but it's not a sadhana. It's just the natural social system that the devotee uses. Śrīla Viṣṇu Chakravarti Thakura writes, everyone must worship me since I give life to all of varnas and ashrams. So it's Krishna is the essence of the varnas and ashrams. Right, because you look at it, okay, equanimity and non-violence for the sannyasi. Equanimity means you're seeing everything in connection with Krishna. That's the equal vision. Like that. It's not a political position. Right? You know. It means that. And non-violence means everything is being done in connection to Krishna. So where's the violence going to be? You know? That's the, you know, it's just like you said, killers of the soul. They don't acknowledge the soul, they don't acknowledge Krishna, they don't. So that's violence. Then, austerity and philosophical understanding. So you have the proper understanding and you're willing to be engaged in activities in pursuance of that, even if they're difficult. So how is that a problem? Right? That's also Krishna. Household, giving shelter to all living entities and performing sacrifices. So Krishna gives shelter to all living entities. So one is able to then take part in that. Since one is thinking that I have family, I'm doing this, I'm getting these benefits, then you're doing the things that Krishna does, so therefore do them on Krishna's behalf. Right? And then serving the spiritual master, then that's the whole principle, is that you're always serving through the devotees. So that's the process. So there's nothing in these, in essence, that is a problem. So these points must be obtained. Then the other details, that is to facilitate attaining them. Does that make sense? Right? By living in the ashram, that makes it easy to serve the spiritual master. By hearing instruction, it makes it easy. Right? By having nothing else to do, that makes it easy to serve the spiritual master. Right, there's no kids to take to the dentist, so therefore you can serve the spiritual master.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So it makes it easy. All these things are there to see that you are everybody in whatever their position is doing something connected to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the whole point. So if it's understood that this is how you approach Varnashram, then it becomes much easier. But if Varnashram, as we said, means, you know, taking care of cows and growing carrots, then, you know, Hari Bol. Well, different audience. Growing cabbages. For Americans, it's growing carrots. I don't think they like cabbage. Yeah, a lot of temples, they wouldn't even use cabbage. It's considered low class. You know. Like that. Once you cross the Atlantic, then they understand the finer points of cabbage.
The most recent is making incense sticks.
Making incense sticks from cabbage?
No. Varnashram means also making incense sticks.
Oh, making incense sticks is part of Varnashram. Mm-hmm. Okay. Are we hand rolling these?
Yeah.
And they're organic, everything
yes.
is like that? Okay. Huh?
Which varna is
that one?
To which varna
it
belongs?
No.
Because they are the only things that get sold.
Ah. I see. So the grihasthas organize and get the other three varnas to do it. I mean, the other three ashrams to do it. Okay. Oh, yes. Everyone must worship me since I give life to all of the varnas and ashramas. Without that worship, all varnas and ashrams are useless. So unless it's connected to Krishna, then it's useless. So all these points, being developing equanimity and nonviolence, has to be seen in connection with Krishna. These are not just nice platitudes. These are actual levels of consciousness that require cultivation. Each of the four social orders headed by the Brahmins was born through different combinations of the modes of nature, from the face, arms, thighs, and feet of the Supreme Lord in His universal form, along with the ashrams. If any of the members of the four varnas and four ashrams fail to worship or disrespect the Lord, who is the source of their very own creation, they will fall down from their ashram. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.3-4. Like, so it has to be seen in connection. So Daiva Varna Ashram is actually the thing. If you don't, you'll fall down from that position. So even if you follow it for a materialistic purpose, one will still be lost. That's how you go back down the other side of samsara. Right? That makes sense. Yeah. Conclusion. One should logically consider the entire universe to be be a product of the Lord's illusory energy, or produced of the Lord's energy, and thus give up faith in such things to exclusively meditate on the Supreme Lord. Right? So, if everything's coming from Krishna, then one gives up faith in such things separate than his connection to Krishna. So then one is able to exclusively meditate on Krishna. So even if you see everything in the material world connected to Krishna, you're still meditating on Krishna. Right? And that, because it's coming from Krishna, then it takes you back to Krishna as the person. Right? The main religious duties of a sannyasi are equanimity and nonviolence. Of the vanaprastha, austerity and philosophical understanding. The householders to give shelter to all living entities and perform sacrifices. And of the brahmacharya, service of the spiritual master. Right, because when you perform sacrifices, then so much is given in charity. You do so much service to all the ashrams, right? To the Brahmins, to the ashrams, everything like that. When such varnashram duties are dedicated to the Lord in loving service, they award the supreme perfection of life. A Paramahamsa is not under the control of injunctions and prohibitions. Although actually not most learned, the Paramahamsa devotee pretends to be a fool. Although actually fixed in the Vedas, he behaves in an unordered fashion. He sees this because he doesn't have any particular thing to accomplish other than remembering the Lord. So wherever he is, whatever reminds him, then that's where he goes, how he behaves. He sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead in all creatures and also all living beings within the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Lord Himself, although not at all subject to the Vedic orders and prohibitions, by His own free will, executes various prescribed duties. Similarly, the Paramahamsa, even while on the platform of freedom from subjugation to Vedic rules and prohibitions, carries out various duties. A person desires his own best interest but does not have knowledge how to attain it should take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. Filling his mind with faith, keeping free from enviousness, and remaining fixed in devotion. The disciple should serve the spiritual master, whom he should regard as non-different from the Supreme Lord. That also then was what you said before. Who desires his own best interest, but does not have knowledge to attain it. Because the only best interest is to become Krishna conscious. So they may have some detachment, they may have some the piety like that, but they don't know how to attain devotion. They approach the spiritual master.
Something like
Vaishnava
Das Babaji.
Yeah, like Vaishnava Das Babaji. Yeah. So he was very scholarly and all that. And he became, but when he came in contact with devotees, then he could see that there's something more. Yeah. So then he looked for someone who could explain this to him.
Do we have a Paramahamsa class of people nowadays in the society?
Means like you want a designated, how you say, the DP, the designated Paramahamsa. Because you always know you can count on him to drive. No, there would be no designated. I mean, as it is, we have hard enough designating anything else. You know? So in that way, then everybody's Paramahamsas, right? Because it's a position, it's a development of the consciousness. And so then, even if you did within the preaching mission, you may not see it as such. Because then they are following the rules, not because they need to, because of the benefit that they'll, can take place within the, you know, the benefit of society. That didn't work. Because here he has to, he'll climb all the way back up to me again. Yeah, after a long life of running around in the underground, now they can come out and fly for one evening. So technically there's no need to. You wouldn't want to, otherwise it becomes ritualized and all that, and that's the point, it's beyond these things. So either you won't understand, or they'll follow everything, they'll follow the rules in that to, you know, fit into the, you know, the preaching elements, and you won't understand. So in either case, one won't understand. So only someone like Maharaj Yadu, he might understand. Right? So even the Vedic system, there's no designated as such. There's individuals that are there, but it's not as such designated.
Because if we look during the times of Lord Chaitanya, it was very obvious. You know, Goswamis, they were Paramahansas, and then their followers spread the mission, and it was very great, but then somehow or other it became very, very small, and just few Babaji's sitting here and there.
But
and then it comes back as the wave, as a new wave, in a sense. Then we don't have Paramahamsas as you mentioned, designated.
Yeah, designated, because the whole point is at the time, how the Goswamis were acting in Vrindavan, that's generally how Vaishnavas would, if they weren't Grihasthas, that's then how they would live. Is that?
Yeah.
Because it's with Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur that you could say that the Vaishnavas started wearing saffron.
Yes.
Only because then it's recognized, and then people see it as preaching, and then he gave the thread, so they would consider them Brahmins. Not that the Babaji's have Pancharatrika initiation, and they chant these mantras. They just, if they didn't have a thread, they didn't, you know, bother wearing. It means the Vaishnavas, if they didn't have one from Upanayanam when they were a kid, they just didn't wear one.
Yes.
So he regulated that so people would notice the preachers. But if we look at it at the time of the Goswamis, then there are those who noticed, but there's also many who didn't notice or appreciate. You know, like that Digvijay pundit who came, wanted to debate with Rupa Goswami because he heard that he's, you know, a big guy.
Yeah.
You know, so you have like that. So it's not, if you go from now and after some time, some generations, and they'll look back on the president and think of, you know, what great devotees and how much they did, and you know what I'm saying? So you even see now some stuff, you know, like we said before, Shivananda, you know, as a kid, he went to Germany and started the yatra, you know, and then a handful of devotees went to London and started the yatra there, and at the same time as they were, you know, because they needed a place to stay, so they were living with the Beatles, you know. I mean, who does that? You know, so that kind of things is they were doing amazing things. So the future is people read the, you know, Prabhupada Lilamrita and what was happening then. I mean, that doesn't mean there's any less to their position. What I'm saying is that they're definitely on that transcendental platform. the Goswamis. But we have to be careful that it's not due to not being able to appreciate that we think that nothing's going on now. Does that make sense? So there's so many things going on, there's so many great personalities. But we won't notice or like that. Is that the kind of thing? You know, because the dress and all that, that's also not as important. So we just do what we do.
Sometimes the tendency is to recognize great personality after they left the body.
Yeah, that's generally quite...
Often.
Yes.
And even a Paramahamsa, he should not be restricted, or rather, he would not be restricted to only ashram as vanaprastha sannyas. He could be even a grihastha ashram, a Paramahamsa.
Yeah, could be. Could be. I mean, by the consciousness, but... I mean, so are you talking about just on consciousness, or kind of like the lifestyle?
Yeah, lifestyle, more of the lifestyle.
Yeah, because consciousness, it could be anybody. Yeah. But it also, as he says, that they remain hidden.
Yes.
So even if they are, you may not notice.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's just like, I remember Krishnadas Babaji. Then he was a really good cook. So he would, I forget where it was, the ashram. Oh, where is that? I didn't even remember which ashram it was in. But he was there in an ashram in Vrindavan. And he just lived with the brahmacharis, and he'd cook. He was the cook. Like that. And then during the festival, he used to come down when during Gaur Purnima, when Prabhupada was here. And I'm not sure if he would cook, but he would come and serve prasad. You know, just with everybody else, because if he does that, then no one will really complain, because no one really knows who he is. Mm-hmm. Like that. And then afterwards, then the fun part would be, he would sit out... Oh, no, I think he pushed me. Yeah. Then he would be outside, and because water wasn't so prominent... You know, you had a pump, or you had a tap, and sometimes there's no electricity, there's no water, and this and that. So you had, but, you know, everybody would have to go to one place and really walk. So he'd sit on another side with a pot with water in it and invite devotees over to wash their hands. Mm-hmm. They'd do that every day. And once all the devotees are gone, then he would go back inside, and then generally he'd clean and this and that, and then eat less. So his normal thing is he would cook, serve the prasad, clean everything, all the pots, when everything's clean, then he would sit and eat. Mm-hmm. But no one would notice. There would be a few devotees who knew who he was, then they would get him to... But otherwise, everybody else was quite happy to let him go on and serving, you know, they thought it was great, you know, nice. It's, I don't have to go over there and stand in line. I can go to this guy and get my hands washed. You know, so it's just... Because, like Maharaj Yadu, then they're able to see the symptoms. Because otherwise, some would know from hearing from others, or you know, the kind of the social structure and all that. But others wouldn't know; they didn't know. So is that? Yeah.
There's a saying: "It takes one to know one."
Yes, it takes one to know one. Yeah, I guess in the positive. I've never thought of that. aphorism used in a positive way. You said, "Takes one to know one." I always learned it to use in the negative way. When someone is going, yeah, this guy, this, that, yeah, it takes one to know. What are you saying? nothing. Why, someone said something?
It's the murky comment.
Huh?
The smirky comment.
Yeah, this is snarky comment. Yes.
Beginning of Krishna Samhita, Bhaktivinoda Thakur comments that somebody who's recognize a swan-like person will soon become a swan-like person.
Something ah, like. Yes. You have to recognize you'll become like him. Yes. Mm-hmm. So, okay?
Yeah.
So, it's one of those things that's not designated. You know, just like Siksha Gurus, they're not designated. We try to ritualize it, but it's not like that. Diksha Guru, that has ritual to it. But Siksha doesn't, because the Diksha is part of the Pancharatrik system. Like that. Siksha also means there, but Siksha is specifically the Bhagavat's part. So it doesn't have those kind of formalities. You know what I'm saying? But the Diksha Guru is trying to get you to function on the Bhagavat platform. And since we're not, therefore there's a formality to go through and system to go through to get you there. Yeah. So, does that make sense?
Yeah.
It does. So we have to be careful that we don't. Just like Vanaprastha, you see, there's nothing mentioned there of any, how it just moves. Bhanu will mention a little bit, just as it says when you see that your hair is going gray and you know, and there's grandchildren, that's the time for Vanaprastha.
Yeah.
You know, like that. You know, you take other symptoms also. The skin's getting loose, it's getting wrinkled, teeth are falling out. It means you can just go on and on. But the point is
about the eyes.
Yeah?
He said about the eyes.
Eyes, yeah, they get weak, you can't quite see anymore. So then, yeah. Yeah, so that's the, you know, then it's time to, but that's it. That's the ritual. You know, we'll try to we'll try to create a ritual about it, you know, fire yagya or something like that. But no, it doesn't have one. Because the point is it can happen in any time in anybody's life, so it doesn't have the same formality as, you know, going from brahmacharya to grihastha or, you know, going to, that has a major change. But the vanaprastha is something that, it's just somebody who's more mature takes it up. It's their maturity that they accept it, and their maturity they maintain it. Like that. So it's just that's the position. So it doesn't need formalization. So.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.